Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to the Dominic Enyart Show. I'm your host, Dominic Enyart. I talked briefly about swearing on yesterday's show. Joe Rogan said the N-word in the past, and he's received a lot of criticism for that. And I was saying that that was wrong of him, not because of racism. Joe Rogan is obviously not a racist, but you should not say that just because we shouldn't swear in general. You know, cussing is wrong, no cussing. And cussing is interesting because there are a lot of Christians who think that cussing is not really a sin, which seems blatantly false to me. But I thought I'd talk about it on today's show. And, you know, cussing, it presents a few dangers, which we don't often think about. As a Christian growing up, I fell into both of these dangers, but I'm lucky enough to have recognized them now, and I can work on them now. But before I talk about these dangers, I would like to lay out the case that cussing is sinful and that we should not do it. Ephesians 4:29 says, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." So let no corrupt word proceed from your mouth. I mean, that could mean a lot of things. That could mean, you know, don't sing praises of worship to false gods, right? That would be corrupt words from your mouth. Or you could say something lustful or violent, or you could even have a pro-abort tweet. You know, you could do hashtag shout your abortion and talk about how much you love your abortion. And that's clearly corrupt talk, yet the Bible teaches elsewhere about violence and murder and being lustful and worshiping false gods. And I don't think this is just telling us information that we already had, and it's not just reminding us. If so, you can make the argument that this verse would be unnecessary. Rather, I think it'd be better to say that this verse conveys new meaning as well as old meaning. And it's teaching us here, let no corrupt word leave your mouth. That, you know, don't be swearing, don't be cussing. Colossians 3:8 teaches, "But now you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth." So, put off filthy language out of your mouth. This one is a little bit more explicit, no pun intended, than the last verse. You know, filthy language, don't have filthy language. You know, you can say the phrase, "I'm happy I aborted my baby," and that's a vile, wicked thing to say. But those words aren't in and of themselves filthy words, right? Any of those words in other contexts, they aren't necessarily unappealing. Even that word aborted, you could say we aborted the mission, and that's not necessarily unappealing. But dropping words like the common cuss words, that's bad. That is filthy language. Matthew 12:35-37 says, "A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." And this one is it's a smack in the face, right? You will give an account of every idle word. That's rough. Every idle word. I've said a lot of idle words in my life, and I've just, you know, been talking to a friend or something about the most meaningless stuff, and I'll have to give an account for that. And imagine every idle word. Imagine then cussing in comparison. So you get angry and you stub your toe and you say a curse word. You have to give an account for every idle word, and then that's a cuss word. First and foremost, a cuss word, that's an idle word. Secondly, it's going to be more severe than just an idle word. It's a cuss word. It's a filthy word. And most of the time when Christians cuss, not all the time, but most of the time, Christians, they say it's okay to cuss. And when they cuss because they're angry and they're frustrated, or they stub their toe or something like that, which it's sad because a lot of times Christians will try and have intellectual conversations about cussing, and they'll say, well, the words themselves, you know, the syllables, they don't have any power, but it's the intent of your heart. And to a certain extent, that's true. You know, the syllables, there's no specific power. There's no magic that they have on their own, you know, and when used in proper context, a cuss word often will no longer be a cuss word. Say with a donkey, you know that example. But then these Christians who justify cussing and they're acting like they're having this intellectual conversation about why cussing is fine, very often, not always, but very often, they will get frustrated and start cussing. And you can tell that their heart isn't in the right place. So cussing on its own, it is wrong. You know, even if you're just in a vacuum, say you're on a deserted island by yourself, cussing is wrong. But just for the sake of argument, let's pretend that on the deserted island in the vacuum, it's not sinful to cuss. I mean, it is sinful to cuss, but we, you know, just for the sake of argument, we are going to the land of make-believe where it's not. And even in the land of make-believe, unfortunately for the, you know, the Christians should be allowed to cuss crowd, they are not alone on a deserted island, and they are not in a vacuum, but they live near other Christians and other people around them constantly. And so I'm going to combine two biblical principles to argue that even if you are correct that cussing is not inherently sinful, which I believe it is, but even if you're correct about that, I still don't think you should cuss, and here's why. So two biblical principles. The first biblical principle teaches that if you believe something is wrong and you do it anyways, that is sinful. And that's one reason why being legalistic is so dangerous. Because, for example, you might believe that drinking alcohol is sinful. It's not, but you might believe that. And you would put that law onto yourself and say, hey, I can't drink alcohol, that's sinful. And it's hard to keep that law. And so, you know, when you impose laws on yourself, you very often don't keep them because it's difficult. And so someone might say that's sinful and impose that law on themselves. And then they might start drinking and they might think it's sinful and drink. And of course, Jesus and the apostles, they drank alcohol all the time. So it's not sinful. But just the fact that you think it's sinful and you do it anyways, that fact causes it to be sinful. And the second biblical principle is that you should not do things which are amoral if it causes another to sin. Causing other people to sin is, reading the Bible, that seems to be one of the worst things you can do. Matthew 18:6, it warns, and this is a scary warning. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a millstone in Golden, Colorado, walking along the river there, the river that feeds into the Coors factory where Coors makes all its beer. You can walk along that river there, and there is a millstone. And the millstone, it's this giant, probably, you know, it's been a few years since I've seen it, but it's probably 7 feet from one side to the other with a hole right in the middle. And it's this big concrete slab, must weigh a few thousand pounds. And it has a hole right in the middle. The hole is maybe about the size of a coconut. In Matthew 8, and it's big, big, heavy thing. And in Matthew 18:6, Jesus, he's talking, and Jesus warns, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. And so that's pretty intense. That's pretty scary. Imagine, you know, like being tied to some cinder blocks and thrown into the sea. Jesus is saying it would be better for a millstone to be cast around your neck and for you to be drowned in the depth of the sea than it would be for you to cause one of the little ones to stumble. And that's scary. Then later in 1 Corinthians, Paul says, and this is chapter 8 if you want to read about this, he's talking about eating meat, and he says eating meat is fine, that is not sinful. But if eating meat causes a brother to sin, I will not eat meat, because it's more important that I do not cause my brother to sin. So to the Christians should be allowed to cuss crowd, there are many, 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 many Christians who believe cussing is sinful. So even if we are incorrect and cussing is fine, you still have an obligation to give up the meat, so to speak. You have an obligation to give up the cussing, because your cussing would easily cause the rest of us to fall into sin by either A, starting to cuss ourselves, you know, when you're around someone who's doing something you think is sinful for so long, naturally you start to mimic that person and you mimic the people that you're around. So you'll likely cause them to cuss. Or B, you know, they might not cuss themselves, but not having the courage to say something to you about it, which would be pulling us into the sin of apathy. So when you cuss around someone who thinks that cussing is wrong, you're very likely getting them to sin, even if it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. And remember that with moral issues, we're always to err on the side of caution, right? If you're not 100% sure about something, don't do it, right? If you don't know, err on the side of caution. And a good test to see if you think cussing is really okay or not, I know a lot of people, they lie to themselves about sin because it's hard to give up sin. And a good test to see if you really, you know, have the courage of your conviction, ask yourself if you would cuss in front of your pastor. Don't ask yourself if you'd cuss in front of Jesus. A lot of people do that. They ask themselves, oh, would I do this in front of Jesus? But don't do that. Don't, because very often you get caught up in your own dumb thoughts and ideology. And Jesus, you see him as more of this idea than a tangible person. And so obviously Jesus is the standard, but with a pastor, it's a lot easier to see the pastor as a tangible thing and as a tangible test you can use. So ask yourself, would I cuss in front of my pastor? And if the answer is no, it's good chance that the cussing is a sin. And, you know, we're so caught up in trying to be like the world. But the Holy Spirit is within us and has set us apart from the world. So if you're asking yourself, you know, you should ask yourself this somewhat consistently. What have I given up for Christ? What is it that I want to do that I don't do anymore because I'm a Christian? What is it that separates me from the world? And, you know, if you've been living a godly life, you should be able to think of a lot of stuff. And cussing, that's one you should be able to look at and say, you know, hey, I don't cuss. I gave that up for Christ. And, you know, I'm not saying this is an easy thing to give up. You know, things that are worth doing are very rarely easy to do. But I remember, speaking of being separated from the world, growing up, I didn't cuss much. But when I was in high school, I started to cuss, I'd say a lot. And I remember being at hockey. I grew up playing hockey for the local high school. I didn't go to high school. I was homeschooled. But I grew up playing for the local high school. And so I had a lot of public school friends. And at hockey, people in that sport, they tend to cuss like sailors. And I didn't cuss for a long while growing up, probably until about sophomore year in high school. And I remember in sophomore year in high school at hockey, I started cussing. And I remember I said a cuss word and everyone in the locker room, like, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but everyone in the locker room was like, whoa, guys, did Dominic just cuss? And, you know, I was trying to be cool. I wasn't thinking about morality or God. And I was like, oh, why is that even something you would think that I'm different from you? Because I mainly wanted to fit into the world. And, you know, we're talking about not fitting in with the world. That's kind of the whole point. But it really was I'm really sad that I did, because that would be such a cool testimony to realize, like, oh, hey, there's something different about Christians. Christians don't cuss. And being around those people, the hockey players, I mean, they were my friends, but it was really damaging to me, because it definitely made me start cussing. And then that's something I've had to deal with ever since. You know, you have to fight so much to say that cussing is not sinful, right? And it's one of those things that it's right on the line, but there's an old adage, and it goes as follows. If you're taking a walk around a lake in a park, and you see what you think is a duck, and it's like 10 feet away from you, and you're like, oh, I think that's a duck. And if it looks like a duck, it sounds like a duck, it feels like a duck, it walks like a duck, it smells like a duck, it's probably a duck. And the same is true with sin. If it feels like sin, it's probably sin. If all your sinful friends and all your atheist friends, if they all cuss and they're vile, and you wouldn't cuss in front of a six-year-old girl or, you know, at your church, that's because it feels like sin, it sounds like sin, it's probably sin. So flee from sin and resist the devil, and he will even flee from you. So cussing is bad on its own. I mentioned that cussing, it has two dangers, which we don't often think about. And the first one of those is that cussing, it pushes back the line, right? And there needs to be a firm line in the sand. One side is good, the other side is evil. And we should not move that line. We shouldn't push it back. We shouldn't try and gray out the line. You know, right and wrong is very black and white. And the more we try to gray it, the worse that things are. And cussing seems to be, you know, so close to the line on the side of sin, and it seems so minor that we don't think of it much, and we just say, oh, it's really not that big of a deal, so we don't resist it. So because it's so minor, it's seemingly minor, it's not minor, but since it's seemingly minor, we give in. And we should never give in. And that leads us into the second danger, which is that it opens up a pathway to not resisting other sin. And you may have heard of the sin snowball. It's like when you start doing one thing that's sinful, it's almost impossible. I'll just go out and say it is impossible. Not it's almost impossible. It is impossible to be, you know, doing one thing that's sinful and just fully going with it, and then not struggle in other areas with your walk with Christ. And I've noticed in my life that I've never had a time where I've been struggling really hard with one specific sin and then doing great spiritually in all other areas. Whenever I struggle in one area, it makes me struggle in all these other areas. So cussing, and that's the thing, right? That's such a powerful sales pitch of Satan, is to make you think, oh, this one sin, it's really not that big of a deal. And then when you do that, Satan gets a foot in the door, and then it's almost impossible to stop him from that point. So draw a firm line in the sand. And what you can even do with that firm line in the sand, you don't have to edge up next to it. You can be a comfortable 10 feet away from that line in the sand. And ideally you just keep walking away from the line, further away from the line, flee from sin. And yeah, things will be a lot better. And you'll honor God by getting further away from that line and closer to righteousness, which is closer to God himself. So cussing is bad in its own right, but even if you disagree, you still have an obligation to help out the rest of believers. And this point is a point that frustrates me, because Christians are so eager and willing to accept that idea until it means they have something that they need to give up that's actually difficult for them to give up. So you say, oh, you shouldn't drink in front of an alcoholic, and everyone cheers and claps and says, oh yeah, I'm all for that, right? Because that's easy to do. You just go one night at a party without some booze. But say with this example, you don't want to cuss, and Christians, they throw a fit and they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. And so cussing, it's hard to stop cussing. I cussed all throughout high school, and now I have my accountability meetings, and I've added cussing to the list of things I want to work on with my accountability partner. And yeah, it's hard. It is really hard to stop, and it's not fun to try and stop, but it is something that we have to do. And it is sad, though, that with Christians, we're, you know, we're the body of Christ. We should all, you know, we all have our jobs to do. And it's sad that when we suggest that we try and give up things to help other believers, Christians get so angry and so mad. And I've never really brought this up myself, especially as a single guy, because it would be somewhat awkward. But I've seen debates between Christians, and some Christians have made the point that men struggle with lust and sexual temptation more so than women. And in one of these debates I saw one side was saying that women, Christian women, should dress appropriately to help men avoid falling into the sin of lust. And the other side, it was a few Christian ladies, and they got so mad. And they were so upset to think that they had to do something to help out the guys. And they were pointing out that men should get themselves under control, and it's not women's responsibility to fix men, which is true, right? Fellas out there, if you're lusting after women, that's your fault, and you should do a better job. But so that's true. They've got a good point there. But to the ladies out there, it's just like how when you don't drink in front of an alcoholic, right? Him being an alcoholic, that's sinful. And that is his responsibility to fix, but you do what you can to help out, right? And the same is true with, you know, men. You shouldn't go around wearing bikinis or yoga pants out in public in front of guys. And it's like, I imagine that's really sad and annoying because it's comfortable, or, you know, whatever all the positive attributes of those things are. But here's the thing, and I'm not just picking on the ladies. I'm saying this specifically to illustrate my point with cussing. But glorifying God is a team effort, right? And it's not just about you. You definitely want to prioritize your walk with Christ, right? That should be the most important thing. Your walk with Christ is more important than your friend's walk with Christ. But you want to help others glorify God as much as possible. And fellowship is an important thing that glorifies God. And if you're cursing away at Bible study, or if you show up dressed like a stripper or with a bunch of alcohol and you know there's an alcoholic there, whatever it is, you're dragging others around you down. And you have an obligation to love your neighbor and to sacrifice for them. And sacrifice that... It's not, you don't sacrifice what's easy to sacrifice, because that's not much of a sacrifice. Typically, when you sacrifice something because you love them, you're sacrificing something that is hard for you to give up. And now, none of this means that if someone sins, that they're not the ones to blame. Of course, they are the ones to blame. But as Christians, let's try not to provide any more stumbling blocks. You know, Lord knows there's already enough of those out in the world, but we don't need any more of them, especially from within the church, which should be a place and a group of rest from the temptation and the stumbling blocks. So, all right, guys, I've got some bad news, terrible news. This might be the worst news of all the news. And I'm getting old, guys. That's my bad news. I've been waking up recently with my back being so sore, and it's like I'm 20 years old, and I always hear people in their 60s and 70s complaining about their sore back when they wake up, and I'm 20 years old, and I'm waking up, and my back is so sore. And it's so frustrating because it's like, hey, I'm 20 years old. I'm supposed to be invincible from all forms of pain. But apparently I'm not, which that was terrible news to find out. But I woke up this morning at about 4:30 in the morning with severe back pain. And it was just killing me. And I've been waking up recently with back pain. It's just been sore. But I woke up this, my back pain is what woke me up at 4:30. It was so bad. And so this morning, crazy early, the sun hasn't even come up. I'm sitting there and I'm Googling. I'm trying to figure out what do I have to do to get my back pain to go away, which that's not something I want to be doing when I'm 20 years old. And it's sad. It's 4:30 in the morning. I can't really ask anybody for help because everybody's asleep. But I have some family who live in Puerto Rico, and they are 3 hours ahead, so it was about 7:30 for them. And I ended up, after a while, giving in, and I texted my cousin who lives in Puerto Rico, and I said, my back hurts so bad. What do I do? And my cousin, she suggested that I try yoga. And yoga, I thought, that'd be kind of gay, and I probably can't do yoga. And if I do, I can't tell anybody about it. But I'll admit, the pain went out, and I did some yoga, and now I'm talking about it on the radio, so there's that. And my cousin, she sent me this video that was yoga for back pain, and I'm sitting there doing this yoga, and the instructor on the yoga video was just saying, like, okay, now grab your leg like this and pull it like this. And I remember at one point, it was like 5:30 in the morning, I was sitting there doing yoga, and I thought, this is like the most stretched out and painful thing I've ever done in my entire life. And then the instructor, she said, okay, now you want to further that stretch and make it more intense. And I thought, if I do this, I'm going to die. I will die from doing yoga. This is the most painful thing I've ever done in my life. And I realized how sad that would be if I died from doing yoga because my back was sore. I can imagine going to heaven after I died from my yoga. And then, you know, a few years in, we're all sitting around a campfire up in heaven talking about how we died. And there's all these, you know, great men of history saying, you know, oh, I was crucified upside down because I didn't want to be crucified normally, like how Jesus was crucified. And others will be saying, oh, well, I fought in this war trying to defend freedom. And, you know, oh, the government had me killed because I was preaching. And then I'll just be kind of sitting in the corner, all nice and quiet, because I'm all self-conscious about how I died. One of them will ask me, oh, well, Dominic, how did you die? And I'll just be like, oh, you don't want to hear. And everyone will be like, oh, come on, Dominic, just tell us how you died. And then I'll be like, I was doing yoga because I hurt my back, and I died doing yoga. And they'll be like, well, geez, man, that's how did you hurt your back? Were you in some war? Were you defending some poor maiden? What was going on? How did you hurt your back? And I'll be like, you don't want to hear. You don't want to. It's not. And they'll be like, no. Tell us how'd you hurt your back? And I'll be like, I was sleeping. I was in my bed, and I was sleeping, and I hurt my back from sleeping. And they'll say, well, Dominic, that's not very manly, is it? But they'll say, no, it's not. And then I'll be ashamed for the rest of eternity. So that was my fear this morning. Hey, join us tomorrow for Theology Thursday. May God bless you guys.